Do you like cooking? What's your favorite dish? Today, we're in the kitchen, so join us to improve your cooking vocabulary on
Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Hello, I'm Craig.
And I'm Reza.
With over 45 years of teaching between Reza and I, we're going to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. Hello, Reza.
Hi, Craig. How are things?
Pretty good, my friend. How's things with you? How are you doing?
I'm not bad. Are you busy? What's cooking?
What's cooking in the kitchen? I don't know, man. What's cooking in your kitchen?
I've got this and that. I've got a concert coming up. I've got a few interesting things to do. We're talking about what we're doing, our plans. You can say what's cooking, right?
Yeah, what's cooking? Yeah, what's cooking? What's happening? So in this episode, we've moved the microphones, all the podcasting equipment into the kitchen. We're now sitting in the kitchen and we're going to speak about food and cooking.
Craig, do you find the kitchen a bit hot?
Yeah.
Well, you know what they say.
What?
If you can't stand the heat,
get out the kitchen.
That's what they say, yeah. Which means if a situation is too much for you, well, get away from it. Leave it alone.
Yeah, if you're under too much stress, then leave it. Go away. Don't do it. If you can't stand the heat, get out the kitchen. Before we speak about food and cooking, we have an email from Martin Heras, who is currently living in Manchester. Reza, what does Martin say?
Hi, Reza and Craig. Writes Martin. My name is Martin and I am from Spain, but I am currently living in the UK. Concretely, I think you should say actually in Manchester.
That's concretamente would translate as actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Concretamente, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Or specifically. We wouldn't say, would you say concretely?
No. Actually, in Manchester. Yeah. You could say actually or maybe specifically or something like that in Manchester. First of all, I'd like to say that you both do a really great job helping thousands of people to improve their English skills, and I consider that very remarkable.
Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. Even more, when you do it, even more, I think you mean what's more. What's more, when you do it using a lovely sense of humor. That's why I listen to your podcast every single week. Having said that,
here comes the bad news.
Having said that, I'd like to comment on something about episode 124. With numbers in English. Episode 124, where you spoke about how not to repeat yourself in English, and you gave us different alternatives about what to say when you can't hear someone properly and you need the other person to repeat it again. You spoke about sorry or could you repeat? But I was really surprised when you didn't mention pardon or say again, which are the most popular ways, at least here in Manchester. Did you forget them, or are these two ways not so common in London or Belfast?
We did forget them because they are common, aren't they? Yeah. We didn't mention those.
Well, you wrote Martin, say again. I would say say it again. Can you say it again?
No, in London we'd use that.
You say say again?
Say again.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, in Belfast we don't at all, so maybe that's why I didn't think of that one.
Yeah, okay. No, my father, my dad uses that all the time. You say again, because he's going a bit deaf. Bocosoro is going a bit deaf. He says, say again, means repeat it, please.
Yeah.
But it's quite informal. You would not use that in an interview or a formal situation. But pardon, you would. Pardon is very polite.
Yeah.
Pardon, if you want repetition. So thank you for that, Martin. I completely forgot those two expressions.
It's good to have listeners who are living in a native English speaking environment, and they can update us on these things, because Craig and I don't know Manchester so well. So thanks, Martin. Martin goes on, another thing I can hear every single day at work is ta, instead of thank you or cheers. And if I remember well, I think you didn't mention it either, did you?
No, we didn't. We didn't mention ta, which again is very informal, a very informal way of saying thank you, especially in the north of England.
Yeah.
Do you say that in Belfast?
Some people, yeah, but I identify it more with the north of England.
Yeah, me too. Tar very much.
Yeah. Also, I'd like to share with you that the most common way to name the three principal foods, you mean the three principal main meals in a day in Manchester is as follows. Breakfast, dinner, and tea. Regards, Martin. Ah, okay. So in he's saying that the meal in the middle of the day is called dinner in Manchester, and the meal in the evening is called tea.
Yeah, that's quite common in the north of England, and we did say on the episode that perhaps in the south it's more common to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's what I would say.
Yeah, and in Belfast, the most common is breakfast, lunch, and tea.
Yeah.
Kind of a mixture.
Yeah, so just know that tea can be a drink, and it can also be a meal in the UK. A full meal can be your tea, so, which is strange.
Isn't that really strange that the word dinner can mean the meal in the middle of the day or the meal in the evening, depending on where you are? It's different meanings for different people. It's very confusing, isn't it?
But I think almuerzo in Argentina can be lunch, comida. You can say almorzar for comer, mediodía. Right. So that's confusing there as well. Interesting.
You've helped us to clarify our doubts about the north of England, Martin. Thanks very much.
Yep, and if you'd like to go back and listen to the episode in which Reza and I spoke about different ways of repetition, asking for repetition and saying thank you, that was, as Martin says, 124, so inglespodcast.com/124. And thank you, Martin, for your email. If you'd like to tell us what you're doing in Manchester, are you working, are you studying, we'd love to hear your voice, so maybe you could send us a voice message and tell us how long you've been living in Manchester, what your impressions are, any problems you've had perhaps, what you're enjoying. Your writing's very good. We'd love to get a voice message from you or even a video. We've never asked for videos from our listeners, and I know sometimes it's difficult. You feel embarrassed recording an audio, and a video is even more, perhaps, more challenging, more difficult. So I'm wondering who is going to be the first listener to send us a video. So if you feel like recording yourself on your phone or with a camera speaking English with a video, we'd love to see that, and we'll also include that on our website at inglespodcast.com.
Craig, I think we have more feedback. I think we have a message from Mamin, is that right?
Yes, our good friend Mamin has sent us a voice message, so let's hear what Mamin has to say.
Hi Craig, hi Reza, this is Mamin from BSCast. How are you doing? Finally, I can return to listen to your podcast, and I missed you so much those last few weeks. And well, I want to share with you one thing about how to improve our level of English, because I was listening to one of your podcasts in which one of your listeners told us about how to improve by listening to your podcast and the Look English podcast also. And I think that put your devices on English languages is a very good thing to learn. And I don't know, I have my phone in English, my computer in English, and so on. And I think it's a good practice that you can do if you want. So that's all, only to share with you. And thank you so much for your amazing work, and a big kiss and a big hug. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks very much for your message, Mamin. And I'm really sorry I didn't get back to you. You wrote me an email just before Christmas, and I meant to write back to you, but I got really busy and it slipped my mind. That means I just forgot. So I'm really sorry, Mamin. I hope you're doing well up there in BSCAS. And thanks very much for the advice. Good advice, Craig, no?
Yeah, I think that's a really excellent advice. I mean, I use a lot of software in Spanish because I live in Spain, and it's definitely helped me to improve my Spanish, having computer programs in Spanish and forcing me to use it. So why don't you try it for 1 month? Just change everything on your computer to English. Try it for 1 month. And you can change it back if you're not happy. But just see how you can improve your English and learn new vocabulary by having your operating system in English. Another idea, karaoke. Practice karaoke in English. You could go to a karaoke bar and sing some English songs, or you could practice at home and use your computer to sing along with karaoke on YouTube, for example. And another idea I got from a recent interview I did with Jack Askew from tofluency.com, he suggested Airbnb and couch surfing. You could go and stay with an English speaker. You could invite English speakers to come to your flat if you have a spare room, if you have a spare couch or sofa bed. Why not put an advertisement on Airbnb or couch surfing? Invite English guests to stay with you. You can practice English with them and you can earn money at the same time. With Airbnb, you can charge for the room. Couch surfing is usually free, but it's a great way to have free lessons in English because you have an English speaker in your flat. So that's another idea of how you can practice. And if you have a higher level of English, you could also be a tour guide in your city. So you could have people staying in your flat. You could show them your city, speak to them in English, take them to popular restaurants where you live, make money and improve your level. Think about it. You're making money, you're practicing your English. All you do is you open your house or your flat and let somebody sleep in your spare room.
Although a word of warning, I think they're all great ideas and I would do them myself. But be subtle, S-U-B-T-L-E, sutil. If you're going to be a host, un anfitrión, in Airbnb, because it's happened to me, in fact, that I've been not in Airbnb, but I've been in hotels or guest houses, una pensión, or things like that. And the owner has wanted to practice their English with me, which is fine, but you don't bother your guests too much. Just have normal conversations with them in English and don't say to them, as people have said to me, oh, you're an English teacher. Oh, good. I'm going to practice my English with you. That kind of turns me off a bit.
Yeah.
Me quita las ganas. If they just spoke to me in English, even if they made mistakes, that's fine. But if they say to me, oh, I'm going to practice my English with you, well, I think, well, you know, actually, I'm on holiday and I'm paying you money to stay in your hotel and you're asking me to work for, I'm paying you to work for you. It's a bit annoying.
Did they ask you to correct their English?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's
so not good. I think it's a great idea, but just don't kind of demand is exigir that your English-speaking guest helps you, but just speak to them in English and it will improve your English. But don't demand or don't ask them to correct you, and they will naturally do it. But you have to be subtle about it.
And don't be a nuisance. So we had an expression in last week's podcast, ser pesado or pesada. Do you remember what that was? Pesado?
Don't be a pain in the neck.
Yeah, don't be a pain in the neck or a pain in the ass. Be nice. Don't be too suffocating.
A funny thing happened to me many years ago. I've just remembered. It was in the street. It wasn't when I was staying in an Airbnb. It hadn't been invented then. We're talking about 20 years ago or 25 years ago when I worked in Turkey. And I was speaking to another English speaker who then had to go away. And I was on my own. And a person had been standing beside us about to cross the road in Turkey, in Ankara. And they said to me in bad English, oh, you're an English teacher, I guess. You're English. I said, well, Irish actually, but yeah, okay. I speak English. She said, oh, would you just correct this for me? And took out some corrections out of her bag and asked me to correct them.
You're joking.
This was before she said, hello, what's your name? We had never met before, ever. A complete stranger.
Amazing.
A complete stranger at a traffic light produced corrections and said, would you correct this for
what
me?
What did you say?
Perhaps I was a bit naive then and I did correct them very quickly. But I don't know if I would now. I wouldn't be so patient now with someone who was so cheeky tener tanta morro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, would you?
No. I'd probably laugh and say, yeah, I charge 40 euros an hour.
Yeah. So I'm just saying it's a great idea, but be subtle about it. Do it discreetly. Don't demand that the English person helps you with your English. Just have a natural conversation with them.
Yeah, good advice. We have had a suggestion from Maite on our blog, englishpodcast.com, who says, why not speak about cooking vocabulary? Because Maite likes cooking. So we're going to take her advice, and to use a phrasal verb, we're going to take her up on her suggestion and speak a little about cooking. Now, we spoke about cooking way back in episode 20.
Ooh, that was a long time ago.
Oh, it was. So if you want to revise your cooking vocabulary, that's at englishpodcast.com/20. But just to do a very quick revision, Josep, revision of those words that we covered in episode 20. Rezo, if you say the Spanish, I will leave a gap. And maybe the listener can say the English word before I do. So we're testing you. Reza's going to say the word in Spanish.
Yes.
I'm going to say the word in English after a short pause. So you try to say the word as quickly as possible and then repeat it after me to practice your pronunciation.
So this is revision. If you remember from our previous episode, we were asked to explain the difference between revision and review. Here's revision from episode 20. Hervir.
To boil.
Hervir a fuego lento.
To simmer, which means to cook in a liquid on a low heat. To simmer, S-I-M-M-E-R.
Caldo.
Stock.
And one of my favorite caldos, although in general is good, caldo gallego. Ooh, caldo gallego, very good. Let's continue. Getting hungry. Cocinar al vapor.
To steam. S-T-E-A-M. To steam. Steam vegetables.
Cortar.
To cut.
Trocear, or maybe picar.
To chop.
Cortar en lonchas o en rebanadas.
To slice.
Cortar en daditos.
To dice. D-I-C-E. Dice.
Calentar.
To heat. Heat is also a noun, remember? The soup's ready. Take it off the heat. Or heat the soup.
Or if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. And recalentar.
Here we need a phrasal verb. That's to heat up. So you could say, can you heat up the stew or heat up the soup? It means to heat again or reheat. So we hope you remembered those verbs. If you haven't, they'll be in the show notes of this episode or go back to episode 20. Now let's look at some more verbs connected to cooking. Reza, what do we have?
The first verb is add, A-D-D, to add. That means to put ingredients together or to put one ingredient with the others.
That's very common in recipes, isn't it? Add the salt, add the flour, add the eggs, añadir.
Because sometimes the order is very important in cooking. So you have to put certain ingredients before you add the others. You've got to get the order right.
Mm-hmm. The next verb's not so common. It means to mix quickly and continually. And you often use this with eggs. Is it batir in Spanish?
That's right.
In English, to beat. B-E-A-T. So you beat the eggs. Can you think of any other things that you beat in cooking? It's usually eggs, isn't it? You beat the eggs.
Eggs, or beat a mixture, a kind of a semi-solid, semi-liquid mixture you could beat.
Yeah.
Of course, another meaning of beat means to win in a competition. So beat with an object. Valencia, in my dreams, beat Real Madrid. But in reality, it's probably not true. But I wish Valencia beat Ganaro, Real Madrid.
Yeah, so you can beat an opponent or beat a team or beat a person. You can also, when you hit somebody, pegar is to beat. You can beat up a person, pegar. So, Reza, how would you say when you put two or more things together, mezclar in Spanish?
That would be combine in English, combine, or mezclar, or combinar. Yep. Mm-hmm. Crush is another common word for cooking. That's to cause, to separate, or flatten, hacer plano, by extreme force.
Apretar or machacar in Spanish. That's often used with garlic, isn't it? You'd crush garlic, for example. You could say we're crushing it with this podcast. If you're becoming really successful and lots of people are listening and you're really popular, you could say, oh, we're really crushing it. Also, if you're making a lot of money in business, for example, we're crushing it with this new software, for example.
Craig, what does the word great mean? G-R-A-T-E, great.
G-R-A-T-E. That's when you rub something on a uneven surface, for example, with cheese. If you've made food and you want to put grated cheese on top, in Spanish, rayar. So that was what you do with the cheese to make it into very, very small, tiny pieces. Divide into small parts is to grate. You could also have the expression, her voice grates on me.
Ah, that's another meaning of
great. Another meaning of great.
Meaning it irritates me, it rubs against me.
Exactly.
It irritates me, yeah.
Yeah, the sound of nails, uñas, on a blackboard grates on me.
And Craig, you know what the next word is? Greece is the word, he's the word. Oh no, I've gone and sung again. Oh, Greece is the word. Greece is the word on the street.
Greece. Don't worry, I'll edit that.
Oh no, don't edit it.
I'll remove that when I edit the podcast. G-R-E-A-S-E, Greece, is to coat, cubrir, with oil or butter, engrasar. So grease. So you grease a baking tin, for example. If you make a cake, it's a good idea to grease it so that the mixture doesn't stick. Pegar.
And why is that famous film with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John, why is that called Grease? It's not about cooking.
Isn't he a car mechanic or something?
Exactly.
So he works with grease and he looks greasy. Greasy is the adjective. So his hair looks greasy. We had, where I grew up in a suburb of London, we had a local cafe called the Greasy Spoon, and they sold like bacon sandwiches and fried breakfasts and all that greasy food that you sometimes get in English cafes.
Craig, I think you need to talk about the next word.
I need to, yeah, because the next word is need. Exactly the same pronunciation, but the spelling is K-N-E-A-D. What does that mean? To need, for example, need dough.
Well, I need dough because I'm very poor.
You better explain that.
But I'm getting ahead of myself. Me estoy adelantando. K-N-E-A-D, need, as Craig said, is to press and stretch dough.
What's dough in cooking?
Dough is la masa. D-O-U-G-H. Dough is la masa. So you get la masa, the dough, to make the bread. Yep. So the word need is associated with making bread and cakes and similar things. Amasar.
So that's easy to remember, because if you remember the expression, you need the dough, which is trabajar o amasar, trabajar la masa, so you need the dough. Well, of course, you need dough to make bread. The thing is, need is spelled K-N-E-A-D when it is amasar.
And just like in, just the same as Spanish, pasta, la masa, la pasta, de amasar, means money. Also in English, it means money. Yep. You probably didn't know that. Yeah.
So we need dough to live. We need dough to buy food.
I guess you've all heard of a donut, right? Well, in British English, we spell it D-O-U-G-H, dough. Nut, N-U-T. It's like, nut is like a circular thing, Like in mechanics, you have little circular metal things. They're called nuts. So a donut is like un anillo de la masa.
Mm-hmm.
But in American English, they just spell it D-O-N-U-T. But that's where it comes from. Un anillo de masa.
Exactly. Next verb's a little easier. To mix, you may have heard. To combine two or more things when you use a spoon, a spatula, or maybe an electric mixer. When you mix the ingredients, mezclas juntos.
Measure is a very important verb in cooking. It means to obtain an exact quantity, medir. What sort of things do we measure, Craig?
It's very important if you're making a cake. When you're cooking, you have to measure the ingredients. You can measure temperature. You can measure distance. Lots of things you can measure.
The next verb is a bit tricky to translate into Spanish, melt. It could mean to make something become liquid through heating.
Like to melt the chocolate, for example.
Yeah. Or it could be to become liquid through heating. In other words, it could have two translations in Spanish. It could be derretirse, which is to become liquid through heating. Or it could be fundirse, which is to make something become liquid through heating.
But what happens with, like, snow? Because snow melts naturally.
Se
but
derrite.
You're not heating it.
Yeah, se derrite. Yeah.
Okay.
That's without heat. But fundirse,
but fundir you'd use in the kitchen because you're applying heat so that something melts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to melt is when it becomes liquid, basically. So in English, there's only one verb. Snow melts and chocolate melts when you heat it.
And in English, it's the same for reflexive or not. Snow melts. There's no object. But I melt chocolate. Chocolate is the object. The difference in Spanish would be fundir o derretir, that's with an object, or fundirse o derretirse, which would be without an object because it's reflexive. But in English, we don't bother about reflexive.
Sometimes when you're cooking, you need to take some meat and make it into very small pieces. So in Spanish, that would be trocear o picar. So the word you need for that is to mince or to grind food. So mince, M-I-N-C-E, and grind, G-R-I-N-D, to grind food or mince food into small pieces, usually with meat. The thing is, in British English, beef that has been minced is minced beef with a D, so minced beef, although Americans will probably say ground beef.
From grind,
from grind, exactly. So ground coffee, ground beef is more in American English, and minced beef is more in British English.
Our next word's very easy, peel, pelar, to take the skin off fruits or vegetables.
I often confuse that in Spanish. I say pelear.
Ah,
okay. Voy a pelear una banana.
Una banana. I wonder who would win the battle.
Always make that mistake. It's pelar, not pelear. So, yeah, to peel, P-E-E-L-E-E. Also a noun. So peel, orange peel, is corteza.
Craig, let me try and pronounce this as close as I can to the dictionary. Paw.
Very good. That was excellent.
It was a big effort.
That was fantastic.
Pour. I wanted to say pour, but I said pour.
To pour the water, P-O-U-R, is echer or verter. Shall I pour the wine, for example? I'll pour you a beer. To transfer liquid from one container to another or into a glass. So you pour wine and you pour liquid into something.
I was trying to pronounce it like as close as I could to Oxford English, which, of course, is without any final R sound, pour. But if you come from Belfast, you say pour. And if you come from America, you say something like pour.
Yeah, very different.
And it's exactly the same with the next word, stare or stir in Belfast.
What was the first one you said?
Stare.
That sounds like stare, which is...
Oh, you see, I got it wrong because... This is fascinating. I am mispronouncing this word because for me it's tricky. Like, give me another chance. Stir.
Yeah, that's it.
That's better. Okay.
It's in from where I'm from the south of England. It's the same vowel sound as her. Aya. So her or were. W-E-R-E. Were. Her. Stir. It's that sound.
For me, if I just do it without thinking, I say stir. mm-hmm. which is quite a different sound. Stir.
You make it shorter. Yeah.
Yeah, and with a bit of there. Stir.
Stir. Stir the liquid. Stir the tea.
And if you go to parts of Scotland, and they might say, "Oh, what are you doing there, laddie? I'm stirring the tea, sir. Stirring." You might
because
get a double
they
R in there.
Roll the R, don't
stir.
They?
Stir. Stir. We're exaggerating, but, you know, there's differences.
And I've noticed that some Spanish speakers roll the R like that when they're speaking Spanish. They might say, revolver. Have you heard that? Yeah, and some don't. So it's strange.
So stir is remover, eh? And remove is not remover. Eh? It's stir.
Yeah. Another strange spelling, W-E-I-G-H, is pronounced weigh, pesar. So to measure the weight of something in grams or pounds, kilograms, is to weigh. And the noun is weight. So the vowel sound in weigh is the same as in pay and stay and may, etc. A, to weigh the flour, weigh the ingredients.
Let's go on with some more vocabulary. This time, let's look specifically at ways of cooking, because there are many ways of cooking, and we've chosen the most common as a little selection for you now. Let's start off with bake. How would you define to bake, Craig?
Well, you use an oven.
What's an oven?
Horno, un horno. So you use an oven, and you cook it, you dry cook it. You cook something in an oven by using heat. So examples of things that you would bake, you can bake bread, you can bake a cake, you can bake a potato, you can have a baked potato.
Do you like baked potatoes?
I do. I don't have them often, but I love baked potatoes. But I think these days I'd usually cook them in a microwave, because you wouldn't say bake them in a microwave, would you? Mm. Bake is usually the oven.
A baked potato, if you've never had one, because it's certainly not typical in Spain, is you get a large potato, a baking potato, and you put it in the oven and bake it. And then traditionally, when it's baked, then you slice it in the middle and open it up. Mm-hmm. And then you put in a filling, whatever's going to be in the middle.
Or just with salt and butter. It's really nice.
Or salt and butter.
Irish butter.
Of course, the best in the world. Sorry, the French, but it's true. Typical things to put in Britain and Ireland are things like tuna and
sweet corn
or
grated cheese.
Yep, grated cheese or
baked beans.
Baked beans is another classic.
With the tomato sauce mixing with the butter of the baked potatoes, delicious.
And you use a really big potato, so just the one big baked potato and the filling is a meal. That's it. You don't need anything else.
And if you clean the potato well, clean the skin of the potato, the skin goes really crispy, crujiente, so you've got the soft, smooth potato inside and the lovely crispy potato skin that's then with butter, it's delicious.
Another thing you can do to potatoes, well, you can do just about anything to potatoes if you come from Ireland, is boil them. What's boil, Craig?
Boil, I think we mentioned before, which is to cook something in a liquid at a very high or maximum temperature, so you see bubbles. So you can boil water to make tea, for example. Hervir. There's a similar word in American English, which is broil with an R, so B-R-O-I-L. What does that mean?
That used to confuse me when I was a kid, that word, because it doesn't mean the same as boil. The broil in American is to cook meat or vegetables on a rack. That's like a kind of shelf or with open space for heat to get in.
In the oven.
A rack or a grill at an extremely high temperature by exposure to direct heat.
But is that in the oven?
No, it's not in an oven. Ah. It'll be an open space, won't it? So that there's direct heat cooking it. So there's no oil or there's no water. It's direct heat, but it's an open space. It's not in an oven, right? That's to broil, isn't it?
So that sounds like what I would know as a grill, G-R-I-L-L, which is, well, I remember in the UK, a grill was something above the hob. The hob is the gas or electric rings that you cook food on.
Above,
and then the grill.
Or sometimes below. In my cooker, in my parents' cooker, it's below. But yeah, it can be above
as well. The grill's below?
Yeah, it's actually below.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it's more often above, isn't it? Yeah.
And that, but I mean, is that what you'd use to broil?
Yep, as far as I know. The American word for that is broil and the British word is grill.
Okay, that's clear. Right.
Although the Americans would use the word grill if it was done a la plancha.
They speak about grilled cheese a lot.
A la plancha.
Right.
So that when you get a big piece of metal over a direct heat, Americans would use grill for that.
And hamburger, as well. They grill hamburgers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if it was like, as Craig said, with heat above it, you know, so it's not actually touching la plancha, mm-hmm. the grill, Americans would call that broil. Mm-hmm. But in British English, we would also call that grill, wouldn't we?
Yeah. We would, yep. The next word's easier, barbecue, because we use that in Spanish, to cook foods, mainly meat, on a barbecue or on a grill, in American English, by using fire or maybe hot coals, coals carbon. So you would barbecue sausages, chicken, meat, etc., steak, perhaps.
Coals or maybe charcoal, which is carboncillo.
Mm-hmm.
To fry, well, you can't really live in Spain and not eat fried food. The Spanish fry a lot of food, more than the British, I would say. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
When you cook something, when you cook food in extremely hot oil, so you could fry an egg, for example, you could fry bacon, you could fry things in a frying pan, and fried food, as Reza said, is very common in Spain and in the UK. Fried food for breakfast is pretty common in the UK.
You can fry potatoes in little bits, and then what do you call them?
Aren't they called sauté potatoes?
I was going to say chips.
Oh, right.
when you fry potatoes in little bits. But maybe I'm very working class, I don't know.
No.
Oh, Craig wants to call them sautéed potatoes. He must have a different childhood than me. I called them chips, Craig. But in Craig's house, they called them sautéed potatoes.
No, we didn't call them sautéed potatoes. I thought you were testing me. No, they are called chips. You're right, absolutely right.
Little bits of fried potato are called chips.
I'd just say chips, it's easier. What are sauté potatoes? Or what is the verb to sauté? S-A-U-T-E? Accent.
Well,
sounds like a French word.
I wouldn't know much about that, Craig. I was brought up on chips. So you better tell me.
Okay. I get it. So, but speaking French as you do.
Maybe.
Is it a French word?
I'm sure. Yeah, it comes from French. Like so many words in English about cooking.
Mm-hmm. And what does it mean to sauté?
It's a form of frying, isn't it? But when you quickly fry them, things in the hot oil. Mm-hmm. So you can fry potatoes and then they're chips, or you can saute them, but then you have to call them sauteed potatoes, which means they're not fried as much. It's a bit quicker.
So growing up in the UK in my house, while my mother was sauteing the potatoes, she
by my mama
sometimes stir-fried food, which is another use of fry, to stir-fry. What's that?
Well, that's a very popular expression, but only in the last 20 or 30 years, because it's a very typical Oriental method of cooking. Mm-hmm. China, Japan, Korea, Thailand, all those countries. It's to cook things in small pieces, frying them and moving them around. Therefore, we say stir, because that's to move around. So you're frying them and constantly stirring them. So
usually in a wok.
In a wok, yeah. So, as I say, that's an Oriental influence which has got into European cuisine or cooking these days. There's another French word, sauté, cuisine. There are many French words which have got into cooking expressions in English.
Bon appétit. A word which I don't think is French, but it's also a way of cooking something, is to roast. R-O-A-S-T, roast.
In fact, it's a very traditional British way of doing things. The British like roast food a lot.
Yeah, we've got roast beef, roast chicken, roast potatoes. It's to cook in an oven or over a fire, usually using oil or butter. So there's nothing better in the world than having roast potatoes cooked in butter or margarine with onions in the oven to roast food. It's very British.
Yeah, so that the Spanish word would be asar. Don't confuse it with bake, which is also to cook in the oven, but dry, not with oil, which isn't a common word in Spanish, but I guess it's hornear.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
What about stew, Craig? S-T-E-W.
Estofar, that's to cook in a heavy mixture, to cook slowly for a long time, like Irish stew, for example. Lovely in the winter, very thick gravy. Gravy is salsita.
Scramble is an interesting word. What does that mean?
That's often used with eggs, to scramble eggs, to mix the white and the yellow parts of the eggs together while you cook them in a pan. That's one of my favorite ways of preparing eggs, to scramble eggs.
I guess the Spanish version of scrambled eggs is huevos revueltos.
Yes, exactly.
I must admit, a dish I really like, a classic and simple Spanish dish, is jamón y huevos. Revuelto de jamón y huevo. Oof,
yeah.
Really good. Jamón serrano, of course, serrano ham with eggs.
Of course. Oh, we've got some of that for lunch, by the way. Some lovely. Jamón serrano.
Let's just take a break and leave the kitchen for a minute and talk a little bit about how you can improve your English. Italki, who are the sponsors of Aprender Inglés con Rosie Craig, offer a one-to-one service for those of you interested in classes with native speakers online. So because it's online, it's very convenient. You can book the time that best suits you, anytime you like. To do that, you go to their webpage. If you go to inglespodcast.com/italki, you'll find more information, and you will see that it's very affordable because different teachers, depending on their experience and their qualifications, offer different prices. So hopefully you can find the native teacher that best suits you. You might like to have specifically a British teacher, or you might want to have an American or Australian or New Zealand or whatever. This is the great thing about Italki. The choice is yours, and you can do it all from the comfort of your own house. So Craig and I would like to say thank you to Italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Let's look at some more common vocabulary and cooking expressions. How would you say, Reza, uncooked food that is not cooked in Spanish would be crudo or cruda, the opposite of cooked?
Like sushi, for example.
Yeah.
Another word for uncooked is raw, R-A-W. Raw.
That's the same vowel sound as in words like door, puerta, or more.
If you're English, yes.
If you're English,
but,
raw.
But not if you're Irish. I'm not trying to be funny.
How would you say it?
Well, raw we agree with, but D-O-O-R, I would say door. But you would say it more like
the door. Nature.
Door.
We're saying it the same way.
Okay. Door, raw. Door. But it's kind of different. Raw. Door and raw. Oh, okay. Similar.
Very, very similar. If you're speaking about steak, for example, or meat, very often in restaurants, they will ask you, how would you like it cooked? So you have various options of how much you want your meat or steak cooked. How do you say poco hecho?
Rare.
And how do you say medio hecho?
Medium.
And how do you say muy hecho?
Well done.
Yeah. So those are the three ways you could ask for meat: rare, medium, or well done. How would you like your steak, sir?
And let me add a little cultural piece of advice to that. Generally speaking, the interpretation of rare, medium, or well done is slightly different in Spain.
Yes, it is.
Compared to the UK.
Yeah.
In the UK, meat is done a little bit longer than in Spain. So if you are a Spanish person or a Spanish speaker and you want what you consider medium, which is medio hecho, medium, if you're in the UK, it might be better for you to ask for rare, or you could even say medium rare, which means between medium and rare, because in Spain, you cook the meat a little bit less, according to your interpretation.
That's a good point. How do you like your steak cooked?
Well, because I like my steak between medium and well done, in Spain, I ask for well done, and I get it just the way I want it, which is a little bit less than well done.
So do you like it when there's blood in a little blood inside?
Tiniest amount.
Tiniest amount, yeah. I like it a bit less than that. I like it kind of medium or medium to well done. If it's not cooked enough, you could say it's underdone. Under, bajo, underdone, or undercooked. cooked. And the opposite of undercooked, obviously, overcooked. So demasiado, overdone or overcooked. So you could say, I'm sorry, this is overcooked or this is overdone. Can you change it, please? It's cooked too much.
And many foreigners, for their taste, find that British food is overdone compared to their countries.
Yeah.
The British tend to cook food a little bit longer than many other countries.
If your egg is underdone, it's probably runny. R-U-N-N-Y. So runny eggs. It's more liquid than solid. You can also have a runny nose if you have a cold.
Yes, when what's normally solid in your nose is becoming liquid and coming out of it.
Children often have runny noses.
Yeah, and me, I have a runny nose most days. I couldn't survive without a tissue.
Do you like your eggs runny?
No, I don't.
Me neither.
What about the word paste, Craig? P-A-S-T-E, paste.
That's a consistency. It's like a mixture of solid and liquid. So pâté, for example, would be a paste. How do you say pâté in Spanish?
Pâté.
Oh, it's the same, it's the same. Pâté.
So another word which we've got not from Spanish, but from French and English, pâté.
Mm-hmm. Trozos in English, chunks. Chunks, you can have chunks of meat or chunks of vegetables, and the adjective is chunky. So trozos grandes, chunky.
Craig, do you like peanut butter?
I do like peanut butter in cakes and with jam, like the peanut butter and jam, or if you're American, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Sometimes are nice, yeah.
Do you prefer smooth, suave, or chunky?
I'm a chunky guy.
Yeah, a chunky guy.
No, the smooth peanut butter is sometimes sticks to the roof of your mouth, el techo de la boca. It sticks around your teeth if it's too smooth.
Craig's a chunky guy. I'm afraid I beg to differ. I'm a bit of a smoothie myself.
You prefer the smooth peanut butter?
I'm a bit of a smoothie, yeah.
Okay. If food does not have a lot of taste, if it's soso, you could say that it's bland, B-L-A-N-D. It's very bland.
Or possibly British. No, I'm joking. That's a joke. No, not all British food.
Well, there's some Spanish dishes that are a bit bland for my taste.
Yeah, you're right. So bland does not mean blando, eh? It means soso.
So what's blando? Soft.
Soft.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to know your opinions. Give us some feedback. Is the stereotype true that a lot of British food is bland? Let us know what you think. Get in touch.
If you like the taste of something, you can say it's very tasty. It has a lot of taste, mucho sabor. So that maybe that's the opposite of bland. You could pay a compliment on someone's cooking by saying, oh, this is really tasty. It's very tasty. I like it. So that's a good thing to say when you want to give somebody a compliment.
Now, a word that Spanish people often get wrong is the word to describe food that is not sweet. What's that word, Craig? For example, meat. What type of food is meat?
I would say savory, S-A-V-O-U-R-Y, savory, because sweet and savory often go together, don't they? You can have a sweet pie or a savory pie, for example.
So savory pie would be a meat pie. And a sweet pie could be, for example, apple pie.
Exactly.
But salty is a different meaning. It means with a lot of salt.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of salt. For example, tinned anchovies, anchoas. Una lata de anchoas. That's something which is very salty. So it doesn't mean just salt in general. Salty means with a lot of salt.
And something that's acidic, something that's not sweet, you could say sharp. It has a sharp taste, like a lemon, for example. Lemon has a very sharp taste.
Sticky, Craig. What does that mean, sticky?
Sticky is something that has a tendency to stick. It's pegajoso. So, for example, if you're playing with glue and pegamento and you get some on your fingers, it's really, really sticky. So in cooking, you could have one of my favorite desserts called sticky toffee pudding.
Oh, me too. Yum, yum.
It's lovely, isn't it?
I love sticky toffee pudding.
Have you ever made it?
No, I've never made it, but I've eaten a few in my time.
Does your mum make a good sticky toffee pudding?
No, it's one thing she doesn't, although she loves it herself, but she's never learnt how to make that.
Can a person be sticky? Pegajoso. Because sometimes people can be sticky, can't? In Spanish, you could say, es un pegajoso.
Yeah. In English, would you say it?
I don't think so, no.
No, I don't. No. I wouldn't say that.
Pain in the ass, but not sticky.
Or pain in the neck for a more polite listener.
If you like the taste of something, you could say, yum, yum, or yummy. Yummy is colloquial English. It's really, children say that a lot, don't they? Oh, it's yummy. It's very, very tasty. This chocolate cake is yummy.
A more adult expression would be perfect for Ángel's homemade mango chutney, which is to die for.
Para morirse.
So good that you would die just to get some. Oh, Ángel's homemade mango chutney. El chutney is like a kind of a savory jam, let's say, but you don't put it on bread. You put it with other things.
It's quite spicy, isn't it?
Quite spicy, yes.
So you could say it's extremely tasty or it's mouth-watering. If something is mouth-watering, it's so tasty you get like water juices in your mouth.
The saliva, just thinking about it.
A mouth-watering dish.
Oh, don't. It's happening to me now, thinking about Ángel's chutney.
You're getting hungry.
Yeah, my mouth is watering.
One or two more words, and then I think we'll break for lunch. What does stodgy mean? S-T-O-D-G-Y. Well, stodgy food.
Well, it's not a good thing to say food stodgy, so it's a criticism often directed towards British food, stereotypically. Kind of heavy and dull, unoriginal, very filling, you know, heavy and high in carbohydrates, you know, just not very interesting, not very exciting, difficult to digest, all of those things. Can you think of any examples of stodgy food?
Well, stereotypically British food, definitely.
For example?
For example, sticky toffee pudding could be stodgy if it's not well made. Mm. The typical pub foods like sausage rolls, meat pies, maybe Yorkshire pudding, dumplings, very stodgy, heavy food that goes to your stomach like a stone. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really heavy and difficult to digest.
Craig, what's your favorite food, or is there any food or dish that you really like?
Here in Spain, I really like salmon. Well, I like salmon grilled with sauteed potatoes or chips. But I like any kind of salmon. I love the salmon fish. I like it grilled. I like smoked salmon. It's one of my favorite sandwiches, smoked salmon sandwich. And I like a lot of roast meat, like roast lamb, roast chicken, and a good steak, of course, a good steak, medium or medium rare on the grill. What about you?
A thing I really like, you've reminded me, if it's well done, is a bagel with smoked salmon and cream cheese.
Mm-hmm.
That's good if it's well done, isn't it?
Yeah.
A bagel which kind of looks like a donut. It's not very popular in Spain. It looks like a donut, but it isn't sweet. It's more savory, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, and sometimes, especially in America, in North America, you can get bagels with different flavors and tastes. You can have an onion bagel, a sesame bagel. You can even have a chocolate bagel. You can have different things, ingredients inside the bagel. But it's like a sweet bread. And you boil it first and then you bake it. And that's why it's very soft inside, but it has a little crust on the outside because you've boiled it first. What's your favorite food?
Well, it's hard to choose one favorite, but some things I like are a really good Spanish omelette is something to die for, but a good one. A bad one is not at all nice, but if you get a good one, that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, by the way, a Spanish omelette must have onion. Some people just put potatoes. I don't consider that a Spanish onion. It's too bland if there's no onion. If it's without onion, I call it tortilla de patatas. It has to have onions to be tortilla española.
So your favorite omelette is eggs with
potato and onion.
And onion together. Yeah.
Spanish omelette, as I consider it.
Mm-hmm.
I like spicy food in general. I was brought up eating a lot of curry. I also like Mexican dishes, which are often spicy, picante, and Latin American ají.
What's that?
Ají. Well, I first ate ají when Vero, Veronica, my friend who used to work at the British Council, brought me some of her mother's homemade ají. Her mother and her are from Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And it's like garlic and spice and hot, interesting things all mixed up. Anything kind of garlic and spicy is ají. Oh, I like that a lot. I tell you a thing I like. It may seem bland to you, but I like it. Is la rosquilleta valenciana de toda la vida. Valencian breadsticks. They deserve to be more famous. Traditional Valencian breadsticks are very, very good. Don't you think?
They are good, but do you mean the packets that you can buy in supermarkets?
No, the artisan ones you get from bakeries.
Right.
That they make themselves, and they put different things. They put onion, olive oil, peanuts.
Do you eat them as a snack, or do you eat them with something like hummus or some dip?
Both. Sometimes as a snack, sometimes to accompany other things. But those things you get in a packet from supermarkets in Britain are so bland in comparison. Those French or Italian grissini, they seem boring in comparison.
I agree. Absolutely, yeah.
Of course, I love Irish potato bread. I love toffee. I love toffee.
You mean the hard toffee that's...
Hard and soft, not too hard. Mm-hmm. Kind of soft or semi-hard.
Do you like fudge? How do you say fudge?
I'm not a huge fan of fudge.
It's kind of soft. It's similar to toffee, but it's softer, isn't it?
Softer. Fudge is a bit sweeter.
Yeah.
It's a bit too sweet. But, oh, I do love toffee.
Toffee apples?
Yes, toffee apples are not bad as well. But I'd rather just eat an apple without toffee. I'd rather have an apple first and then toffee later. But if you want to combine them, then you got a toffee apple. That's true.
So the toffee is your reward for eating your apple.
Yeah.
Well, all this talk of food is making us both very, very hungry. So we're off now to have our lunch. Thank you very much for listening this week. And now it's your turn to practice your English. What's your favorite food? Do you have any questions for us about food or any ideas for a future episode topic? We would love to hear your messages on SpeakPipe, your voice messages. So go to speakpipe.com/Inglespodcast and leave us your 90-second voice message, or send an email to me, Craig@Inglespodcast.com.
Or to BelfastReza@gmail.com.
And for our detailed show notes, if you'd like to contribute to getting all of the past episodes transcribed, we would appreciate your support on Patreon. So that's at patreon.com/Inglespodcast. And we'd like to thank our wonderful sponsors. Who are they, Reza?
They are Zara, Mamin, Juan, Sara, Ori Finnerin, Manuel, Jorge, Raul, Rafael, Daniel, Manuel Tarazona, Mariel, Maite, Lorena, and our new sponsor, Pedro Martinez.
And Lara and Carlos, who you forgot because they're on the other page.
Ah, sorry, Lara and Carlos. Beg your pardon.
Sorry, Lara and Carlos. And, of course, we'd like to thank Arminda from Madrid, who has been transcribing lessons for us. And I'm pleased to say we now have 4 full episode transcriptions. If you do not understand anything, you want to check what we're saying, go to episodes 131, 134, 135, 136. Thanks, Arminda. What's on next week's episode, Reza?
On next week's episode, we'll be talking about a very hot issue at the minute: immigrants and immigration.
Ooh, controversial. Until next week, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.